You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Good morning. You're welcome with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. It is a beautiful morning. Every morning is a beautiful morning, despite what you thought when you went to bed. You know, so just remember that it's a beautiful morning. We have Our Lady, our Blessed Mother. She's there. She's always eternal. She's always got some blooming rose around her. She's always got those eyes kind of looking at you saying, I'm with you. I'm watching you, but I'm watching you not to chastise you all day long. I'm watching you because I'm going to let you romp and play and be you. The you were meant to be, and I'm just going to watch out for you. I'm going to make sure that you don't get hurt and if you fall down, that I'm here to help soothe you. I will do that for you. I am our mother, your mother, and that is a beautiful thing, and I am so sad for Protestants and people who just think we like somehow bow down and worship her like some the statue, as if she is the end-all be-all. Why do we have such a problem thinking that non-corporal entities in every way, shape, and form out there, enormous, never-ending discovery and energy abounding, plug into it? Why do we have such a problem thinking that that can be in the form of our Blessed Mother? Our Blessed Mother, what could be better? We talk about our great universe, and we never tire of spending enormous amounts of money to go further and further and further into the universe. Why? Because it's filled with discoveries, disappointments, when we think, oh, we know that we're going to find life now, and we don't, or we might find a remnant, or we want them, or we think aliens are coming to take over Revlon or something so that we don't have the makeup we want. Whatever thing comes into your head, it fuels imagination, it writes books, it makes movies, it's all there. It's all about everything of unbounding discovery, unbounding transformation. Tell me how a star gets born. Tell me how a planet gets born. Tell me what's beyond the beyond. Tell me what's beyond the galaxy that we just found so far from our galaxy. Tell me about that. Tell me what's after that. Why we just love that stuff. We eat that stuff up for breakfast in our breakfast cereals. We bathe our little children in it. Food for our thoughts and imagination, but it's not idle and useless and harmful because we value it. We spend good money on that. We make billionaires out of people, little voices from making little aliens out there somewhere. We just do. We love it. We love it because it embodies hope, love, being cared for, tendered, and watched. Sometimes it's scary. Our Lady's not scary. Sometimes she might ask scary stuff of us, though. Or sometimes she shows us things we don't want to see. Sometimes she does lead us. Well, they always say she always leads us to her son, which then, of course, leads to suffering eventually and redemptive suffering, which we all can embrace on a good day when we're getting ready to eat our breakfast or go off to Mass and then come back and have coffee or go to a drive-thru and stick out, you know, $20 or whatever it could be. And just as we go and we fill up our tank of gas, we're feeling good. We got the radio on. So we can all talk about redemptive suffering. But when you're in a redemptive suffering, when you're in suffering, it's really hard to find the redemption at that moment, nor do we necessarily have to. Some of us are put together way better than others as far as those saints and scholars and whoever can somehow know in the moment that it's time for some redemptive suffering and how that works. But most of us are just average folk. We just go about our day. We get glimmers. But do you see the glimmers we get? That's money in the bank. The glimmers we get are money in the bank. Those are the, that's the sucker. That's the breath of fresh air, the little tiny drop of water on our tongue. That's the consolation, the momentary relief that we might get when we are feeling our own, when we are in our car and have that music going and we just got out of mass and we said hello to everybody and we gave some money to the church and we have our new shoes on and everything's looking pretty darn good and we smell the roses as we walk out and we look at the beautiful sky and we shake hands and we all meet for coffee. Well, then when your world crashes down, all those people are gone, and you're in the middle of a divorce, or your child just died, or just got diagnosed with leukemia, or is being kicked out of school, or has an eating disorder, or you are, you're just feeling bad. You just think, oh my gosh, or you discover something about your family of origin. Some people don't even know that they were adopted, let's say, and they find out in their 30s or 40s. So many things happen to us, or you're walking down the street and an earthquake happens, or somebody goes on vacation, there's a tsunami. We don't think while we're struggling for our lives. Some people do, though. But you don't necessarily think, well, it's time for redemptive suffering. Someday I'll use this. You need to get out of danger. I remember one guy, when I backtracked just then and said, some people do. A gentleman that I met when I first came back into the church, and he was this guy who would ride around in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, barefoot on a little one-speed bicycle. And he was leather-skinned, and he was a really interesting person. And he was most people found him difficult to be around or difficult to talk to. I had great fun talking to him. I liked him a lot because he always said something awesome. He always had this way about him. And he was an ex-merchant marine. And he lived in a little tiny ship-shape, literally ship shape, but the tiniest little room, but it was spotless and everything had a place. And he loved his cat. He was just a great guy. And he used to ride his little bicycle to the library, public library, read as many church scholars as he could. He had committed himself to be celibate. And he had, when I met him, he told me he had been celibate for at least 10 years. And he was a real character. He used to go down in the early morning, swim every day in the ocean, and he would take coffee to the homeless. And so one day he's riding around and he says, I'm the luckiest man in the world. And I said, wow, cool. Why? And he said, because I get on my bike to go to St. Patrick's and I ride through paradise. Mango trees and flowers and hibiscus and parrots and birds and cockatiels and manatees, and everyone else is paying for it. I'm in the richest neighborhood in the world. I ride through the richest neighborhood in the world, and yet it's all mine. And his attitude was so amazing. But one thing that he told me. When I met him, because I threw this rosary, that's why I love Our Lady of Guadalupe. It was that's another story. It was all just like thrown together in the weirdest way, like, oh, I have an idea. And then pretty soon this awesome thing occurred. However, he told me that he was the tip of South America and there was some big storm and he got thrown overboard and it was dark. There was no way anyone was going to find him. He was freezing cold and he started praying to our Blessed Mother. And an hour later, he was saved. And from that moment on, he began a huge devotion to our Blessed Mother. Little did I know at that time, because I don't know my family history, that I had a great grandfather, Carmelo, named after Our Lady of Mount Carmel, who was in the Mediterranean Sea, loved the sea, was always being captured by his family and stuck back in some tower somewhere to study because he only wanted to run off to the sea. And he was swept over in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea, and he prayed to Our Lady of Carmel. And miraculously, he was spared as well. So we have these devotions, and people can say, well, you know, people get saved all the time and they're not praying. But that doesn't mean that they're not watching out for you. You know, it doesn't mean that there's non-corporal beings out there watching over you. Now, for the people who don't get so lucky, doesn't mean that they just turn their back. No, we all have a path and a road, and we all fit into this mysterious tapestry in one way or another. So today, we are going to be looking at ways that we sometimes worry instead of show concern. And sometimes our worry substitutes for concern. Sometimes people who lack concern become such worriers that they actually put on the clothing, and I'll give you an example. They put on the clothing of a concerned person, but they only do the part. They only have the skeletal framework. And so they can actually end up doing more harm than good. So we'll get into a story about that too. But we're going to keep looking at what Riding the Dragon 10 Lessons for Inner Strength have to say in our chapter 3, because our chapter 3 is Seek Hidden Possibilities. And we're going to really dive into and look at, is there such a thing as therapeutic reaching out to the little kindnesses in your past? What does that do for you? What about this worry versus concern? When is worry a good thing? When is it unhealthy? How does it differ from concern? So we're going to be looking at that. And is there an antidote to the hopelessness and fear that you feel when you look at your failures, your missed opportunities, the problems that you have had? What can we do with those? And sometimes those little tiny things, and how we can do those same things for others, help us completely, not only just heal because we want to heal, but really live wonderful, fulfilling lives. I'm Dr. Michelle, and we will see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. You can call and text right now, live. We are live, and you can call, you can text, you can weigh in, you can give a suggestion, you can ask for a different subject, you can just give us your experience. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. And you can also email me anytime, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. And you are certainly welcome to log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com and access all my previous podcasts, subject matters, whatever, that's all over the board. So there's something out there for everybody. So today, I am reminded of Jesus and the Lamb. I'm reminded of Stella Maris, Our Lady of the Sea, Mary of the Sea, Stella Maris. What a beautiful, beautiful idea. What a beautiful thought. And before the break, we're talking about taking advantage of these amazing forces out there. And that really, it is not so far-fetched. If you want to just say, well, if there's only here and now, I'm here in the here and now, but what is the here and now? Do you believe in the here and now, and that's all we have is on this earth, that there are forces working on you this second you don't see? Well, you have to say that. Yeah, you say, well, no, the sunshine's out there, but do you see the sunshine? What is the sunshine? You might see the dot in the sky that you call the sun, but what is the sunshine, and what is it doing? And if it's what's it doing to you? Is it tickling your little cells to produce melanin? Yes, it is. That's why you get tan. So, and why do you get burned? What's it doing to those cells? And what are those cells? What's it doing to the flower next to you, or the dog, or the person with skin cancer? What is it doing to the tree? What is it doing to the grass? So what's it doing to the water? Why is it aqua-filled water? I mean, what's that about? What aren't you seeing? And when you're on in that water, what are you breathing? And do you agree that we can measure you have negative ions, more negative ions by the ocean than you do somewhere else in the country? And do you, so if you can see that, do you see the negative ions? I don't. So there are so many unseen forces out there that we tend to say, well, it's scientifically proven, but it wasn't. There's a point where it wasn't. So what was their reality? So was there reality when they died? That was just it, but there wasn't, there's nothing unless you prove it, it didn't exist. You know, that's it. We are discovering. We're not proving anything. We're just discovering things. So we may prove our thought or our theory. You know, when somebody has a theory that there's some actual corporeal being with some kind of body on a planet somewhere out there. And one day, somebody's probably going to stumble across one that's not counter to anything that we know, no matter what religion or believing God or not believing in God. It's in their minds and hearts. So anyway, we don't need to talk about the little green men. I want to get back to this thing about worry and concern. So I was going to give you an example, an extreme example between worry, concern, and this is extreme, but it kind of gives you an idea. So if you don't, you probably won't relate to it. If you know someone you can relate to this, or you see some of yourself, it's time to get some help. And I mean that very sincerely, because it is actually what I'm going to describe to you is considered a true mental illness. And it has killed people before. It has harmed people. But oftentimes it can go under the radar. You don't see it. You can't always call it. But it really will give you a bigger than life example. So here's the example, and I'll tell you the name for it later. So the example is this: a young mother, a educated young mother who has a job, is smart, going to professional school, very a wonderful person, very gregarious, funny, engaging, has a baby. And she reads all the books. She is up on everything, all the nutrition, does everything she can to have the best possible birth possible. And she does. So the baby's here. She's got the baby and she's breastfeeding. And then there's something happens and she can't breastfeed. But she's going on. She's going on and she's reading and she's looking and she's thinking and she's being a good mom. And then there's a call. Well, my baby's sick. My baby's really sick. So it goes to the emergency room and the pediatrician looks at the baby and says, you know, everything's okay. Thinking, young mom, no problem. And this starts to be repeated over time. Then it starts to get a little bit more extreme. My baby can't hold down any food. Now, for those of you, these are normal stories. So for those of you whose babies can't hold down food, 99.999999% of the time, you got to get it checked out. And a huge percentage of that time, it's going to be normal. That happens to all babies, all young mothers. But you still have to check it out no matter what. It's very important because you don't want to miss that one in a million things that could be a problem. There's lots of things that go on. So anyway, I always kind of want to put that in there that this is now we're talking example. We're talking under the curve and you should always check with your pediatrician about anything. So it starts getting more and more extreme. And the mother starts getting more and more frantic as time goes on. It's got the baby down to all these different allergies, can't eat this, can't eat that, can't eat this, can't eat that. And they're down to like almost nothing, like one tiny little formula is the only thing the baby can eat. And the baby keeps going in and the baby's, you know, looking lethargic to bring. And then all of a sudden you start seeing these posts on Facebook, on other places where the baby, you know, going into the hospital. You know, the baby's going to the hospital. What a trooper he is. What a brave soul. What a, you know, thing, what an amazing thing she is. What, you know, how this is just so amazing that we caught it in time. And then when you see the pictures of the baby, you're thinking, oh, it's a pretty healthy baby to me. And then time goes on, time goes on, time goes on. It gets more and more extreme. So what happens then she starts to demand surgeries, exploratory surgeries. She starts to demand all these different things because something is terribly wrong with her baby. Now, I got to back up here because every time I tell you the story, I do not want you to think that if you have something like that in your head, that there's a problem. Because on the opposite side of the spectrum are all of us. Every single one of you that I'm talking to, myself included, have had those feelings and no one could see. And you were right. So if you got a feeling about your own child or you got a feeling about yourself, yeah, no, pay attention to your intuition. However, and pursue it. But I'm going now, and don't think you're going to be looked at like this, because no one ever catches this kind of person until it gets extreme, because it is rare. And every doctor I know of, you don't go there. You take the benefit of the doubt always. I mean, it's always like, it's got to be a little nugget in there, but your obligation is to always treat it, everything, seriously. And so you don't shine anything on, because what's the story of the boy that cried wolf? One day the wolf happens. So just because someone is always, and this is in general sense, if someone's always complaining, always threatening, always doing something, don't just say, well, you always say that, or they always say that, or the baby's always fine, and shine it on, because one day the wolf can come down to the town so that the actual thing that they're worried about can happen. But we're doing this to tell you the example of how worry can masquerade as concern, but it can also harm. One of these days, it is going to be serious. And we have to take it very, very seriously. So I think I have time to finish this story. Yes, I do. All right. So what comes about is that the baby then gets all kinds of laparoscopic surgeries and gets barium swallows and checking out the digestive system. It might be this, it might be that. The pediatrician's doing everything they're supposed to do, and going ahead and trying to suggest counseling for the mom, but also looking at absolutely everything, because there's always something that can be missed. And you never assume that someone has this problem. However, what it comes down to was a general manifestation of what is called Munchausen's by proxy. That is an actual clinical diagnosis. And you can have Munchausen's disease or Munchausen's by proxy. And when you see these someone who has this, it's a kind of an eerie thing. So again, it's one of those things. Don't try this at home. Don't diagnose yourself. Don't diagnose someone else. You can have a healthy sense of, oh, wait, maybe that rings a bell. But it really is over the ordinary. Just like someone can say, yes, you know, this is going to be an odd term, but they're a nymphomaniac. Well, if you've really seen someone who suffers from that, it's something you will not forget. So it's like this very thing. There's kind of this gleeful joy of getting into that hospital environment, like they're going to a party, and they get some kind of a thrill from having their child show up at the emergency room. Now that, again, but everyone just looks at that particular mother I'm telling you about as a concerned mother. What's happening in the meantime, the child's just a giggly, happy child. However, the child is starting to get a message, and there's that whole cry wolf syndrome that's happening as well. You can visit it, finish that up, decide the break. This is Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. It is our job in life to walk through life and to embrace every moment, every breath, every little speck of dust that reflects the light. Everything It is our job to do that. We have a job. Now, part of that job, that's like our classroom. Our job, then, we will go and specialize as time goes on. And part of being able to do a good job is not getting so freaked out with our tests and trials. Now, that we can't go on. We can't just stay in that little seat constantly doing our algebra test again. If we fail it and we get an F, we have to move on. We just do. And we find out the world doesn't end. And as a matter of fact, Mick Jagger, I think, was a failed accountant. Now, think what you will about Mick Jagger. We don't know him as a person, and his story isn't written yet. The final chapter isn't here. However, he's not an accountant. You know, he's still dancing on stage at like 97 years old. So who knows what our story is? We don't know our story. We are in the school of life. So getting back and finishing up with this Munchausen's by proxy thought, this is an example, an extreme example of an actual mental disorder that can harm people, because there are those cases that people inject themselves or they inject their own children because of the thrill of being the good mom or dad, and also the thrill of being part of the whole rescue team. There's something about it. Now, again, that's a mental illness. We're not here to go into it. And if you see yourself, again, a little bit of it here and there, and like I've always said with depression, we're all supposed to be depressed. We all worry needlessly. We all overreact. This is way on the other end of the spectrum. But it gives you a clear-cut, bigger-than-life, dramatic, theatrical example of the difference between worry and concern. Now, contrast that with the young mother. When I had to train in pediatrics, we were told, because we were the students and then the residents, we were told by the attending physicians, you know, this is my life, but since I have you, you get to have all the call. So good luck with that. I'm going to sleep. Enjoy your night. And they also prepared us that expect calls every 5-6 minutes all night. Why? Because someone will have just had a baby, and moms with normal mothers with normal babies are going to say, well, they slept an hour more, their eyes twitching, or their little arm is doing something, because moms are supremely protective. So again, we don't make blanket judgments with someone who's acting as in the realm of normal, but when the story keeps getting repeated, when it starts to become more and more dramatic and evident, or one or the other starts succumbing, starts getting sick, and you run every test in the world and you can't find anything, you have to keep that in your differential diagnosis. So, but that is just a clear illustration of worry versus concern. So let's take a look then. And we're looking today is our, we went from, and I hope you did this because I did. Now, I didn't do it a lot, but I did it, and I liked it. And that is what we talked about yesterday. Putting that chair in the center of the living room of your mind. And unlike my living room, where if I put a chair in the center, I probably wouldn't be able to find it, because I'd have to walk through flags from Memorial Day and boxes and Windex and boots and dog things and guitars and, you know, anything else. So I might have to imagine something other than what I am right now. So I imagine a very cleared out, empty space, empty room with a chair, just as Robert Wicks described when he was talking about what Jack Kornfield was describing that was suggested to him. I do that on purpose, because see how that works? Some guy somewhere has some spiritual guidance conversation, and this gets trickled down into a book that somebody was creative enough, smart enough, and had enough vision and drive to write down, and now we're looking at it now. And it really was great. So you put that chair in the middle of the living room, and then you open up all the doors and windows and you just observe what comes through. And I had kind of forgotten about it, and I was making coffee, and I was starting to notice that I was all ratcheted up. I was just amped up. and then I realized, oh my gosh, you've got a million things going on in your brain, and they're darting around like some, you know, little gnat, millions of them. And I was getting very angsty about them, anxious, worried, concerned. People I know who are sick, people I know I want to visit, don't know how to visit one person on one side of the country and another person on the other. And, you know, what the heck? And what will I do with my dog? And then I thought, hey, go get that chair. So I got the chair and I put it in the middle of my mental living room. And I just sat there. I'm making coffee while I'm doing this. And I just sat there and just let all the stuff just come through the windows. And it really, I'm telling you, it works. So if you didn't do that, you need to do that. So that was yesterday that we finished up chapter 2 on Riding the Dragon by Robert J. Wicks. So what does he have to say today in chapter 3, which is Seek Hidden Possibilities? So that's pretty cool. Well, he starts off I said it was chapter 2. We had finished chapter 3, Catch the Slide. That's where we had that information. This is lesson 4, Seek Hidden Possibilities. So he starts off talking about Dorothy Day, as many of you Catholics know, even though I was brought up Catholic, I knew the name, but I really didn't know the name. But she was really, her whole life was about caring for the poor. And he quotes a sentence of hers. She said, quote, "No one has the right to sit down and feel hopeless. There's too much to do," unquote. Now, I hear that and I think, yeah, she's right on. And then I realize, except when I feel hopeless, then I kind of sink down and wallow in it. And so what he goes on to say is, given this, battling hopelessness in ourselves and avoiding unnecessary worry is essential so we can both live fully and be there for others. We must take care of ourselves, prune away unhealthy motivations and intentions, and enjoy the renewing oasis in our lives. And when he gives in that little sentence, he's actually showcasing each one of his previous chapters, because they did start off with talking about, number one, taking care of ourselves. Number two was pruning away at lots of things. And then the renewal of the renewal zones, of our psychological oasis. But beyond this, we must be willing to sense life differently so we don't miss the possibilities that seem hidden for the moment. And then he goes on to talk about, you know what, I think I'll read this to you. "The following remembrance of a spiritual counselor from Ireland and former student of mine demonstrates this in a poignant way. During what was a troubled time for me," this is her writing, the spiritual counselor, "I was about 7 or 8. I visited my aunt on her small farm. We walked together and came to a particular field. It was winter and frost covered the land. The ground beneath our feet was winter, dark, and hard. She looked over at me, smiled, and asked me to kneel down, close my eyes, and place my hands on the earth. I did so, and she said almost in a deep whisper, 'Feel the life.' I couldn't feel anything, and I told her so. She then told me to put my ear close to the earth and whispered hoarsely again, 'Listen to the life.' In response, I put my head close to the earth, but I heard nothing. When I got up and told her that I could neither hear nor feel the life, unquote, quote unquote, she took my face between her hands and said, 'Child of my heart, it is often when the land seems most barren, cold, and dark that life is quietly growing.' When she said that, I knew she was also speaking to my inner pain and the need for hope during the winter I was experiencing at such a young age. Then, almost as an afterthought, she added as we turned to leave, 'We will return again in the spring.' And when spring came, we did return. And as we came over the hill and I ran down the hill ahead of her, I could see that new tender life was shooting up. When she caught up to me, I turned to her and said, 'You were right. You told me the truth.' In reply, she said nothing, just smiled, looked into my eyes, and drew out a smile from within my soul. We also came again when the fruits of the soil were gathered. In this visit, she spoke of the fact that this was a season of gathering the nourishment needed for the next winter. And she said, quote, remember, child, to read the seasons. New possibilities, God, are in them all. All right, so what do we say from the beginning of this program? That it's a matter of putting it in the bank, that we may not feel it or hear it or see it when we're treading on that cold, crispy, frozen, what we think is a wasteland. But if we just read the seasons and understand that there is crazy life going on underneath a frozen, hard, cold, desolate, seemingly inhospitable surface, and it is the growth and the new life of possibilities that must have a barren land in order to grow up. So if your life is filled with barren spots, there's life waiting to grow in its stead. This is Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You can call me or text 573-4BREAD-4 during our live broadcast. 573-4BREAD-4. You are welcome to email me anytime, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. And you can get on breadboxmedia.podbean.com and scroll over or go over to the side, find Dr. Michelle Live, click on that, and you can get all our previous podcasts, all kinds of subjects and talkings and references and all kinds of cool stuff. So, where were we looking at what Robert J. Wicks has to say? That was such a beautiful, it was a student of his who went on to become a spiritual counselor in Ireland. And what a beautiful, beautiful prelude to going into this concept of in a way you can look at it as redemptive suffering. In a way you can look at it as our seasons. We are so narrow visioned. We have our blinders on. We look down. There's a famous painting. I quote about it all the time, but I never can retain who was the artist, who was the master who painted it. It was like a Rembrandt or a somebody. But it was, I mean, you all would know it if you saw it. It's all over the place, but it was this beautiful painting and you saw a darkened area at the base of the painting with all these people bent over. And if you looked, you noticed that they had little apparati, they had little books, they had globes, they had navigation tools, they had pencils, they had building scaffolding things, they had just about everything. They're all looking down. And then there was a layer of clouds above their head. And above that was this beautiful light-filled sky. And there was Jesus raising up into the sky in his resurrection. And it was like, and the beauty on his face, it was one of happiness, peace, beautiful, joy, just Jesus. So that always stuck with me. I saw it as a kid, but I thought, yeah, there's something there that we spend so much time in our books and in our daily plotting and our worries and our concerns and our trying to figure everything out, when the answer to our peace is right there, right there. And as this auntie told her little niece, during a particularly difficult time in her life at 8 or 9 years of age, that we have to come across the barren. We have to try and strain to hear, and we can't hear the life going on underneath, but it will come. So he goes on in this chapter, see the hidden possibilities, and he is talking about, I'm going to see if I want to read something here. Ah, I like this. All right. Because I wanted to put this in here too. When this little girl had this encounter with her aunt, it was just very simple, very small little things. And what I'm going to challenge you to do, something he's bringing up, but what I think is a really healthy thing to do, because again, we're watering your brain. We're watering the parts of your brain that shrunk down as the other parts got nourished and watered. So if you're the worry part and the anxious part and worrying about everything gets watered, we need to stop watering that for a bit, pick out a few weeds, but then it can stay there, but we need to grow the part that got neglected, the part that never got watered, because the seeds are underneath that. And so one way we can do this is by quiet reflecting, maybe in that little chair in the middle of the living room again, quietly reflecting on those little tiny niceties that came maybe sometimes out of nowhere. Maybe it wasn't a relative. Maybe it was somebody who just smiled and said, I like your smile, as you're checking out at a grocery line, or something. Your eyes are on fire, or your energy is so great. Look at that smile. Something, somewhere. And what he says this, he says, I must admit that in my life, it makes me happy to recall my successes. I get a kick out of them. I've worked really hard for everything, so I'm proud of any achievements with which God has blessed me. However, it is in the midst of my failures that I feel things in the deepest way and have discovered the most lasting lessons. One of them is the value of small gestures of kindness and the need to resurrect them as a means of support when all seems lost. Now, I love that thought because I actually haven't thought of it that way. So that if you not only think back on these kind gestures or think, yes, I need to do those to others because you do, but that you can actually actively dig them up, resurrect them, let them resurrect and raise from the dead and be your means of support and your means of life. The kind words and gestures of others are like buried treasure that we can find and explore whenever we need the gold of encouragement and an awareness of the presence of goodness in the world. The kind words of others help us regain perspective when all seems dark. They help us see that different possibilities are with us in every season of our lives. So I want you to really, really, really think about that today. We're gonna hit this tomorrow too. But not only think of it as that, oh, today I'm not having those. Where are those nice, and nobody's kind. He's saying, go back. Maybe ask in adoration or maybe a quick prayer. Hey, help me remember. Gabriel the messenger, help me remember. Send me a message of one nice, sweet kindness. It goes on to say, failures naturally aren't pleasing. No one wants them. However, the more we are involved in life, the more we can expect failure. So we'd better be able to put failure in perspective. Otherwise, we risk responding to failure with denial, avoidance, projection of blame onto others, burnout, and self-blame. These are not very good choices, especially when failure and darkness can teach us so much if we're honest, patient, and remember the advice of Thomas Merton to a friend who was experiencing spiritual darkness. Thomas Merton said, quote, courage comes and goes. Hold on for the next supply, unquote, which is really great because the assumption is that courage, it will not go away. It just ebbs and flows. It comes and goes. So I think we really need to grasp on to that. So he says, he goes on to say that worrying is a waste, concern, a compassionate gift. So that's the difference between worry and concern. Worrying is a waste, Concern is a compassionate gift. He says, we have such a small life, it really passes quickly, yet we often waste much of it by alternating between feelings of guilt for what we have or have not done and being unnecessarily judgmental of others and their actions. When we are not experiencing these extremes, we fill most of the middle ground with periods of worry about what might happen in the future to us, our families, and others who are important in our life. I know that people spend their time mired down in guilt, judgmental thinking, and worry because a great deal of my work involves helping people not to fret unnecessarily. The initial response I often get from people is that worrying is natural. Well, if this is so, then perhaps we need to practice being unnatural. Even if worry is the natural response, to continue along this vein of thinking is foolish. We can and need to do something about it. Imagining powerful religious figures that model and teach the opposite is a good beginning. Buddha's serenity is an example. The Dalai Lama's constant smile is an inspiration. And how about Jesus' simple, challenging question, quote, what does it benefit you to worry? How will it change anything one iota? Unquote. Mark Twain also recognized the total foolishness of worrying when he wrote, quote, my life has been filled with terrible misfortunes, most of which never happened, unquote. Once we have the image of serene spiritual figures in our hearts and keep words debunking the value of worrying at hand, we are ready for the next step. When we feel a sense of worry coming on, we need to catch ourselves and see how it hurts us and hurts those we love. This conscious jolter will encourage us to further appreciate that one of the greatest things we can share with others is a sense of our own peace. It will in turn further reinforce our desire not to give ourselves to worry. Then he goes on to say, somehow worrying is seen as something that will prevent or control terrible events. And it really doesn't. And then he says, he ends with this little, don't attempt to teach a pig to sing. It wastes your time and it irritates the heck out of the pig. So what he was saying was, people like to see worry. We have some kind of image in mind that if we look worried, then we are concerned. But indeed, we are not concerned. As we talked about throughout this whole show, starting with the ease that you can get from our Blessed Mother, looking at what happens when you go to the extreme and have all the makings and the fixings of looking like you're concerned, but it's just idle worry, or can even more, so it can be worse, it can be self-serving worry. So we have to ameliorate these things. So I want to take up with this tomorrow and really think about this today. Get to that chair in the middle of your living room. Remember that worrying is a waste and concern is a passionate gift. Think about those little tiny oases of kind words. Pick one out today, just one, and then we'll talk about it tomorrow. Well, this is Dr. Michelle. We will see you tomorrow. God bless you. Please write DM Live, redboxmedia.com.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.